It is Thursday, December 1st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, international organizations struggle to help civilians in the besieged city of Aleppo. Cuban Americans in Miami rally for democracy as Cuba mourns its late leader, Fidel Castro. And we hear which music stars rake in the biggest paychecks. It's all ahead. Russia pledged Thursday to continue its support of Syrian forces in Aleppo until the city is cleared of terrorists. The Syrian military campaign in Aleppo, which includes Russian airstrikes, has raised international concerns about the safety of civilians in the rebel-held eastern part of the city. Syria has long described opposition fighters there and elsewhere as terrorists. There are more than 250,000 civilians trapped in eastern Aleppo. I spoke to Pavel Shuchak, director of communications for the International Committee of the Red Cross in Syria. Speaking from Damascus, he tells me about his organization's concerns.
The ICRC's primary concern and then objective is to reach the people who have been recently displaced with very much needed humanitarian aid. This is what we have been doing since 27th of November, when the people below the city started massively fleeing into the western side of Aleppo. Together with the Syrian Arab Red Crescent, we managed to reach those people in the collective shelters with the very, very basic supplies yet very much needed, such as sanitation facilities, blankets, mattresses, food, potable water. The situation in these collective shelters, I mean, is very desperate. The people are arriving really with very little belongings, very terrified, very tired. I mean, so many of them need medical aid, so such medical care has to be provided to them. And we are trying to respond as much as we can as the situation evolves, of course, because what we've seen in the past 48, 72 hours, I mean, this is only the part of the response. Yesterday, as our teams were there, colleagues told me that the people, you know, I mean, people were kept coming in the buses from the front lines.
I believe that your organization, the head of the International Committee of the Red Cross in Syria, is calling on all sides fighting in Aleppo to try to protect the civilian escalation. Do you think that will be possible?
Well, of course, we hope that is possible. I mean, we, in fact, whatever we can do is to only call on the parties to protect the civilians, to guarantee them safe passages. We have to remember those people taking enormous risks trying to flee. Well, first of all, they're doing it in the midst of a very heavy fighting, the mortars, sniper fire, explosions, shelling. So they already take a lot of risks and they must be guaranteed the protection and the safe passage where they decide to flee. However, I mean, what we can do is, of course, to appeal is actually in the hands of the parties to guarantee the civilians the safe passage, of course.
Now, I believe your colleagues were allowed to travel to a district in East Aleppo. It's called Hanano. What were the conditions there like?
So, yes, indeed, we managed to, we were granted actually the access to one of the eastern districts of Hanano. It has been the district that was a scene on the heavy clashes a couple of days ago, from where thousands are believed to flee in all possible directions. The place was empty. The place was deserted. We came there to make the assessment of the living conditions to try to see where we can actually make the improvements to the huge, you know, destruction amongst the civilian properties, because at some point the people will start returning to these places, and then in fact this is what we hear from the people. We want to go back home, and we have to right now, as humanitarian organization, do everything to help or to improve their living conditions.
That's Pavel Shushak, Director of Communications for the International Committee of the Red Cross in Syria. Joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's happening?
Well, we're marking two occasions today, and social media is marking these two occasions. The first, which we're going to hear about a little later in the show, is World AIDS Day on December 1st. So we're seeing a lot of people using that hashtag World AIDS Day to draw attention to the disease as far as research for a cure and funding. And you're seeing a lot of people wearing red or red ribbons. Red ribbon is the symbol for AIDS awareness. So you're seeing a lot of those photos on social media as people speak to that. The other thing we're marking today on social media is Rosa Parks. Now, it was in December 1st, 1955, 61 years ago, that she boarded a bus and sat in the front of the bus. Now, at that time, the buses were segregated. African Americans had to sit in the back of the bus, and she refused to do so. And so we're seeing a lot of the kind of the same sentiment worded slightly differently, but that she stood up for civil rights by sitting down, or she kept her took a stand by keeping her seat. And so this kicked off bus boycotts and sit-ins and really was a galvanizing moment in the civil rights movement. So a lot of honoring Rosa Parks today, and a lot of people connecting that 61 years ago to some of the racial turmoil in the country today as far as civil rights, saying that 61 years later that fight still continues, and to remember her actions back then and to use her as an example today. So honoring Rosa Parks for her her role in the civil rights movement.
Very much so. Well, thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. Russian President Vladimir Putin delivers a conciliatory annual State of the Nation speech. Thailand has a new king and marking a new era. Pakistan said that President-elect Donald Trump would love to visit the country. And Europol brings down a global cybercrime syndicate. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Back in late August, a team of astronomers announced that they had discovered a small planet orbiting the habitable or so-called Goldilocks zone of its star, Proxima Centauri, which is a little more than 4 light-years away, making it the closest exoplanet to Earth. A new study expands on the original findings with more details and suggests conditions on Proxima B actually increase the odds of it being habitable. The researchers say that the nearby exoplanet could be an ocean planet covered with the same kind of subsurface oceans detected inside a couple of moons around Jupiter and Saturn. The study also finds that the planet has a substantial metal core and is about 30% more massive than Earth. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up on this World AIDS Day, we look at medical advances for treating the disease. Cuban citizens are lining the island nation's streets and roads to view the ashes of their late leader Fidel Castro. A procession of his ashes is moving east from Havana, following in reverse the route Castro and his rebel fighters took as they advanced on the capital from the Sierra Maestra Mountains before taking power in January 1959. Meanwhile, in Miami, Florida, sub-Cuban Americans there rallied to promote democracy in their homeland. VOA's Christina Gaicedo-Smith is in Miami, and she tells me about the rally Wednesday night.
Well, you know, last night in 8th Street, you know, that famous 8th Street with all the Cuban Americans gather all the time, there was this, we'll say, a concentration of around 500 people. They were, since 5 in the afternoon, they were, you know, with their flags, talking, listening to music, and as you said, they were demanding change in Cuba. This week, there has been, you know, this funeral celebrations in Cuba when they're saying goodbye to Fidel Castro. And here, there's this sentiment of like rage and that they actually want to change. Yesterday there was the 2056 Brigade, that famous brigade in 1960 went to Cuba and tried to get back the country from Fidel Castro. So we were with a lot of the veterans on that battle, with a lot of the families, and you can see, you know, old people, you can see young generations, you know, Cuban generations that have been here for, you know, since Fidel Castro took power in Cuba. So it was just like kind of like this celebration, but people were demanding change.
And what kind of change do they want to see? And do they think it likely at this point, because Castro's brother Raul is still in charge?
You know, there's you have the two sides. Like when we were talking to people yesterday, they're like, you know, he's dead. So I have the hope. You know, people were saying, I have the hope this is going to change. Like, I see this, you know, this with the new administration, they also have a very good trust on the new U.S. administration that is coming up with Donald Trump. They see, like, maybe this is going to change. And then you have the other side of people who say, you know, Raul Castro is still in power. You know, human rights are still violated there. So nothing is going to change. So you have the skeptic people. You also have the hopeful. You also have the people who are just celebrating that Fidel Castro is dead. But they all want the same thing. They want liberty in Cuba, and then they want a democracy system which people can actually choose who they want to govern and who they want them to be governed. And, you know, it's just this sentiment of that democracy and change.
And I believe that a number of Cuban Americans in the Miami area and also elsewhere send money to their relatives who live in Cuba because they're quite hard pressed financially.
Well, yeah, there's been, for example, today I talked to the Cuban American Foundation and they still send monetary funds there. They want to help people, also to help people who are trying to make a change in the island. You know, they're trying to help them economically. They're trying to send phones. They actually are doing that. They're sending phones, cell phones. They're sending laptops. They're trying to educate people to learn how democracy works. Like when the time comes, they know what to do. Because what I hear from this side in Miami and you know, what people think is just there's need to be for them, like, for the people to be aware of what's going on around the world, how democracy system works. So, and they also send money for them to try to buy some food, you know, try to buy. Also, it's just the access to be aware of, you know, through phones, through computers, those type of things, so people can just learn what's going on in the world and that also that they're not alone.
That's VOA's Cristina Gaicedo-Smith reporting from Miami. Well, for nearly three decades, every December 1st, we've heard about the tragedy of AIDS, and it is tragic. The virus has killed tens of millions of people, often in the prime of life, and has left behind millions of orphans. But now, on this World AIDS Day, VOA's Carol Pearson has a message of hope.
A lot has happened since the first World AIDS Day in 1988. Back then, AIDS was a death sentence. The topic was taboo. Now there's life-saving treatment. Mothers with HIV can have healthy babies and live to raise them. And now, scientists are talking about vaccines and a cure. A major clinical trial of an experimental vaccine against the AIDS virus is underway in South Africa. The hope is to reduce the risk of infection by at least 50%. Scientists are also trying to use the body's own immune system to keep the virus in check. One study conducted by the University of Pennsylvania shows this may be possible. Dr. Pablo Tibas, an infectious disease specialist, spoke by Skype.
We infuse antibodies into the patients, the participants in the study, and we want to see if those antibodies would control the HIV virus, would keep it quiet and prevent the virus from coming back when we stop antiretroviral therapy.
Tibas said the research in controlling HIV with antibodies is similar to the immunotherapy being done in the field of cancer. HIV hides in cells. if a patient stops taking anti-AIDS drugs, the virus comes back. The technique uses antibodies, which are proteins, to attack cancer cells.
And when you think about oncology and cancer therapy with these immune-based therapies, what people are doing now in that field is to try to boost the immune system to eliminate the cancer cells. The problem of eliminating the HIV hideout is similar. You want to eliminate the cells that harbor the virus by making the immune system more active in finding and eliminating those cells.
Researchers found that the antibodies suppressed the HIV virus for 21 days. The goal is to find a combination of antibodies that can suppress the virus for 6 months to a year. Then people infected with HIV will no longer have to take medicine every day for the rest of their lives. A new trial using two antibodies should start in the next couple of months. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. Forbes magazine has released its list of highest paid musicians in the world for 2016. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee about the list, which was based on pre-tax income between June 2015 and June of this year.
Taylor Swift comes in at number one. She earned $170 million from touring, recording, endorsements, and what's known as other income. She had $200 million on the North American portion of her 1989 tour.
Yeah.
Thang ruled the world.
Well, and it's interesting that she's at the top of this list. She was also at the top of the under 30 list. She was also at the top of the highest paid women in music list. I mean, she's been topping these lists all year long and for many years. She delivers solid music. She's a great live performer, but she's young and relatively non-controversial. So she can rake in the endorsement deals that maybe other artists cannot. And so there's a lot of money to be made in product and service endorsement. I mean, she was like the New York City representative for a year. I don't think it should be any surprise to anyone that she's at the top of that list, which I think is also awesome considering there weren't very many women on the top half of that list. So for her to actually be at number one says a lot about her star power in general, but specifically as a woman in this industry.
Now let's go to number two, the boy band One Direction. They made scones of money as well, $110 million, grossing $200 million-plus for their On the Road Again tour. Number three was, as far as musicians, was Adele.
Right.
Great concert. Mm-hmm. I saw her in concert here in D.C.
Yeah.
Consummate entertainer.
Because this list was compiled again from June to June, and she just finished her tour
this month.
And well, I guess her Australian dates will be in 2017.
Right.
But it is important to note that probably next year we may see her a bit higher on the list because she will then be able to include the money from June up until November.
All right. Well, let's see. Rounding out the top 10. First of all, we had Madonna at number four as far as the fourth highest ranking musician with $76.5 million. Mm-hmm. Not bad income.
Not
you
bad.
Can get it.
Mm-mm.
Then Rihanna, mm-hmm. who had $75 million. Garth Brooks, Entertainer of the Year for the Country Music Association. A couple of geezer bands, AC/DC, who didn't even have their lead singer. Didn't matter. They stuck Axl Rose in there. And like,
yeah, hey, well, he's a big enough name.
Right.
Yeah.
The Rolling Stones.
Mm-hmm. No surprise there, I don't think.
No, that's no surprise. Mm-hmm. And then Calvin Harris.
Mm-hmm.
Taylor Swift's former boyfriend.
Right.
Before Tom Hiddleston.
Right.
And rounding out the top 10, Diddy.
And Diddy also has the Bad Boy reunion tour. So he's probably making some money off of that. But he's got major liquor endorsements and product endorsements. And he's still doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes. So
collectively, the 30 listed musicians, this is according to Forbes now, the 30 listed musicians earned more than $1.8 billion this
year. We're in the wrong business.
I think I need to go home and practice my guitar. Shauna, it is always great to talk with you. If you would like to talk to Shauna, you can hit her up on Twitter. She is at VOA Lady DJ. And you can also find her show, The Soul Lounge, on our website. That's voanews.com.
Thanks very much, David, and that is our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
Charles Ryan Dikayo, a former restaurant manager in the Mubuga sector of the Gishita commune, is wanted for taking part in the Rwandan genocide in the early 1990s. In April 1994, he helped organize and took part in an attack by police, Interahamwe militia, and armed civilians on a church in Mubuga, where refugees fleeing the violence had sought shelter. The attack lasted several days and resulted in thousands of deaths. For these and other crimes, the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, the ICTR, indicted Mr. Charles Ryan Dikayo on charges of genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes, and issued a warrant for his arrest. The United States is cooperating with other governments, the United Nations, and ICTR to make it harder for Mr. Ryan Dikayo and the others involved in the killings to continue to elude justice. Toward that end, the U.S. has renewed an offer of a reward of up to $5 million for information leading to his arrest. Mr. Ryan Dikayo fled Rwanda and is believed to be living in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. If you or anyone you know has information on his activities and whereabouts, it can be provided with complete confidentiality. You may contact the nearest U.S. embassy, or you can call internationally, 243-81-715-2501. Also by email at rewardsforjusticedrc@yahoo.com or on the internet at www.rewardsforjustice.net/war crimes. The U.S. guarantees that all reports will be investigated and the identity of all informants will be kept confidential. If appropriate, the U.S. is prepared to protect informants by relocating them.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.